Murph, the birds are chirping, the flowers are blooming, it's springtime, we have playoff hockey and absolutely zero hockey here in Boston. On a scale of 1 to 10, how bummed are you right now that we're not covering playoff games?
I'm very bummed, Joe. I mean, I think that it's probably my favorite time of the year, but, you know, thank God we can still watch it, and I've had the chance to cover it from afar a bit, but, yeah, it's weird. I mean, we've been lucky, Joe, as hockey reporters in Boston, you and I, coming onto the scene pretty much in the same time in 2002. That what have been in all that time since 2002, I think there's only been three seasons, not counting the lockout, that you and I haven't been able to cover playoff hockey.
I just feel for all these young whippersnapper reporters covering the Bruins that have never been through the bad times like we have, Murph, the grizzled veterans. We were there when they traded Joe Thornton and there was almost a mutiny in the dressing room.
Yep.
You know, we were there when they bottomed out. We were there for the Dave Lewis era for that first season when absolutely everything went wrong with that team and he just had no handle whatsoever.
What about the
on that
Steve
team.
Shields era?
Exactly. I feel bad for these young reporters that don't know what they're in for the next couple of years,
exactly.
Even past what we've had.
They're getting into it now. They'll
absolutely
get a taste of it.
But the good thing is we might not have playoff hockey here in Boston, Murph, but we can still talk about it on the Great American Hockey Show. We got a great show today. Mike Giardi's going to sit in with us. Mike Felger is going to sit in for an interview. It's going to be an all Comcast edition here of the Great American Hockey Show.
Mike
next.
And Mike.
Welcome back to the 15th episode of the Great American Hockey Show podcast. Joe Haggerty here with James Murphy. Writing for
Jimmy.
Vice Sports now and also Dirty Water Sports. Is that
yeah.
anything else or is it those two?
It's getting really, you know, Vice and Dirty. It's I'm a bad man.
I like it. I like it. A lot of bad things going on in that corner of the room.
Oh, boy.
And we also have with us my compadre, my hockey buddy, who I have not been able to cover playoff hockey with the last couple of years, Comcast Sportsnet New England's Mike Giardi. What's going on, Mikey?
Joe, it's good to be back talking a little hockey, but yeah, this is a little bit depressing. This lack of playoff hockey is it's a killer.
It is, and we were just talking about that, how you know, we went through, and you did too, the down years before the up years, the trading of Joe Thornton, the bottoming out, the Dave Lewis error, the so many bad things, that run where they were going with Zhirdev, not Zhirdev, who's the guy, the Russian that they picked up that hurt his ankle?
Zamnov,
thank you.
Yes.
Jacobs thought he was the next coming of Sergei Fedorov.
The Brian Leetch.
Close.
Trying to bring the Hall of Famer Ryan Leetch to Boston and having that completely fall apart after his career with the Rangers.
Nice guy, though.
He was a great guy, but it's like that filling in the blanks with the veterans sort of slapping things on, the very end of the Sinden O'Connell era of things in Boston. We've been through it before, and I think it's a little bit of a sharp awakening for those young reporters out there that aren't used to the mess that we've seen with the Bruins.
We were just having this conversation in the newsroom. One of the producers was like, I was watching the Dallas game the other night. It's like, it was like watching different hockey. Like I'm like, dude, that was the Bruins in 2013 or 20. Like, it wasn't that long ago that they were playing at that level this time of year. And you're saying, wow, oh, look at that. You know, I'm like, and then how quickly, though, it has caved in on them. And, you know, I mean,
such is the cycle of life in the salary cap era, right?
What for you, what do you see as the sort of tipping point or a couple of them that's gotten them into the mess that they're in now? What did you sit there and see over the last couple of years and you said, oh, this is bad?
Well, I mean, I think look at last year, just the way the Dougie Hamilton situation went down. When you made that deal and you end up with Hamilton, you say to yourself, well, even as we watch him and say, maybe he's not going to be that prototypical number one.
Right.
He's going to be a pretty damn good two or a 1A guy. And
a top pairing guy.
Yeah, we know how important that is because you won a cup and you got to a cup final because you were able to ride those guys, Chara, Seidenberg, certainly stepping up in the postseason. And when that went sideways, and then you looked at your defensive core, you're going, all right, Seidenberg didn't look good last year, and then certainly I don't think he looked very good this year either.
No.
Chara's getting older, and you're telling me about all these guys you have in the pipeline, but as we saw last year, a couple of them – are just guys.
Yep.
And
Zach Trotman, Joe Morrow.
And we don't really know what Colin Miller is just yet.
Right.
And maybe we didn't really get a great opportunity to find out. Maybe that situation wasn't handled well. So to me, that's one of the big things because you just look at it and it's like you just don't get those guys, those ones and twos. They don't just grow on trees. And to get them, you have to give up a lot of capital. And I don't even know if you necessarily
have that kind of capital right now. So it's just
plus the ability to grow him from within, from the get-go, is huge too, I think. You know, like now you got to go out and get somebody that's used to another system, has to come in and adapt to that again. So
we're
not very forgiving around here either. So if he gets off to a crappy start, whoever this guy is, can you handle the heat? Because it's going to get turned up on you very quickly.
Yep. And this is the other part of what you're talking about when it went sideways with Dougie and kind of taking pennies on the dollar for him when they made that trade, is the other end of it was Don Sweeney was planning to trade up and get Noah Hanifin, and he failed to be able to execute the second half of that plan that he had when he traded away Dougie. And that, I think, killed them, that they were not able to get that young guy that they could develop on their own, the draft, the guy that they really liked and bring up, and turn into that player. And really, when you look back, when you go back to around the lockout, last 10, 12 years, almost every single team that's won the Stanley Cup has had a number one clear-cut franchise guy, stud defenseman, from the ages of 27 to 33 years old, or maybe even 25 to 33 years old. You know, whether it's Drew Doughty, whether it's Duncan Keith. Zdeno Chara was 33 when the Bruins won the Cup, so he's right at the very cusp of that. You have to have that player. They don't have it in their system. Yep. I don't think they have it with any of the guys that they've drafted. I don't think there's a guy like that in the draft at all. From what I've been told, there's not a clear-cut number one stud D in this entire draft pool. So now they're sort of left with hoping they uncover like a Duncan Keith end-of-the-second-round guy that all of a sudden pops, or some defenseman you draft that's not a stud that all of a sudden, you know, develops into this gem. And once you start searching for a defenseman that way, and that's your hope for a number one defenseman, I think you're in rough shape.
And Joe, you bring up, you know, that they went all in for Hanifin there, and they put together a plan for that. My problem there, and this goes sort of into what you're saying right now, into the whole grand scouting theme, is – where was the contingency plan?
Right.
That's the issue I have there is, okay, so now you're just going to use all three picks?
Well, John Michael Lyles in the trade deadline was clearly the contingency plan.
And you're going to go off the board, you know, for one of those guys that people are like, huh, what are you doing here? You're not the Detroit Red Wings when it comes to scouting. Let's get that straight. Mm-hmm. You're not even close. You're not even in the same stratosphere. And that's, I think, is a major problem that needs to be examined within the Bruins right now. And I haven't seen any changes on that level at all, which scares me. But, you know, you bring up now you got to go find that guy. They're not going to find that guy because they don't have the scouting to do it right now. They don't have the proven track record. So you're going to have to get him via free agency, which last time I checked, Brian Campbell's not that guy.
No.
Okay?
You have to trade.
You're
going to
have to do it
guys.
For a trade.
And pay through the nose to get the guy.
Thank you, like Mike said before.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you look at there's a list. There's a few RFAs who might be attractive, but it's the same thing. That the cost is very, very high to do that. And I don't even know if I trust them to pick the right guy. Mm-hmm. And that's
before we get away from that draft, too, guys, I posted this on Twitter. And, of course, hindsight's 2020. But it was just fun to say, what if they kept Martin Jones?
Well, yeah, of course. Of course.
I mean, I don't know about you guys. I followed the Kings run there. I know a lot of people in
by,
the organization.
By saying
I know
kept
the guys,
Martin Jones, you're saying trading Tuukka Rask.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know guys that, like, scouted him, so they told me to watch him, and I would scout him a lot, watching him staying up late at night, and I'm like, this kid's going to be a stud. So the fact that they actually got him in that deal and just put so much into getting Hanifin and didn't have a contingency plan, like to read, like, okay, maybe this isn't going to work, and maybe we should keep this guy and see where he's going, that again gets to the scouting department there.
I agree, but the problem with the whole scenario, and I think we talked about this a little bit before the show got started, is trading Tuukka Rask is a lot easier said than done for lot of different reasons.
Right.
He's got a no-movement clause. He bought a super nice house in Newton not too long ago. He's got a young family.
Had it kicked in, though, by then? I don't know.
He just yeah. He had,
it had kicked
he
in?
Had,
okay.
Yeah. He just signed a huge deal for a lot of money to keep him in Boston for a long time. Those guys do not waive their no-movement clauses.
He loves the Buffalo Wings here.
Yeah, he does.
I mean,
he really loves this
wings.
City. He doesn't want to go anywhere. And, like, it might be a little bit more of a believable – well, who doesn't love Buffs? I mean, seriously. I hope they advertise with the show. But I might be a little bit more of a believable scenario now after the way this season ended with him being sick in that last game and getting criticized
a lot for
it.
But again, back to what you said.
But that's how he's going to get traded, is if he sours on Boston, if something gets really bad between him and the team and he says, you know what, this is a bad situation, I don't want to be here anymore. I think that's the only way you can force guys like that into waiving their no-move clause.
That
and
has gone into
that,
the motion in terms of the team making him feel that way?
I think we'll see. I think we'll definitely see.
I think that might be happening.
But above and beyond that, you trade a guy that's making that much money, you're going to have to hold on to salary and retain salary. It's not going to be as easy as getting somebody to keep that $7 million cap hit. You might end up swallowing some of that. And number one, goaltenders don't bring you the kind of value in trade that you would expect others. You get pennies on the dollar for those players. So it's a difficult maneuver to try to trade Tuukka Rask. Mike, what do you think?
Look, my thought on that is I would obviously, I think, like many people, would consider trading him, but the return has to be high.
Mm-hmm.
And you just outlaid the reasons why it's going to be very difficult for it to
why
be high.
Why the other team won't.
If you told me, hey, Mike, you trade Tuukka, and maybe if I have to throw in a younger player, and I can get a number one or number two defenseman in a heartbeat.
Yes.
But that makes you – why would the other side do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing that everybody fails to ask. It's so easy to play fantasy hockey. But.
And again, you're looking at how the playoffs are going now, too, and I still believe you need a good goalie. I don't believe. But does that guy have to be great? Does he have to be no.
Or does he have to be paid $10 million a year?
Yeah, right. Some guys just get going at the right time. We've seen it. I mean, is Crawford a great goalie?
Right.
No.
No, he's kind of a great Grant Fuhr type goalie where he's good enough on a playoff team.
Right. That
with
team
a stud
is,
team in
that
front
team
of him.
Is good. Really, really good. Yep. And if you don't screw it up, kid.
Right.
And he a couple times.
And
he
make some big saves in the playoffs at clutch moments.
Crawford's the Tim Thomas that didn't go away well politically.
You know? I think Thomas is a more talented goalie than Crawford.
No,
we got to give Tim Thomas is his own, in many ways, his own animal.
Yes.
You know,
we got to get him on the podcast.
We will definitely get him on the podcast. We're going to have to go deep into the underground in Colorado.
Say, good luck with that.
Yeah, finding
let's
him.
Let's make it happen.
Let's do it live from his shelter. Tim Thomas's shelter in Colorado. Doomsday Prepper.
You won't be able to get a signal on the
with
phone
with Donald Trump,
and that would worry me if I was with him and I couldn't get a signal on my phone.
All right, Mike. Real quick. What's your biggest thing that you would do first if you were GM of the Bruins to try to help turn this around?
Like I said, I would target it. I would target that high end defenseman. And honestly,
is there a guy you like?
You know what? There are a handful.
Jacob Trouba, Sammy.
There
Bratton,
are a handful of guys.
Matthew Dumba.
But my thing is, don't tell me there's anybody who on your team who's untouchable, and that even includes Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah.
Because you see how it's built. You see how you want it, and. Look, there are certain players you do love, and I wouldn't want to trade him. But if you're telling me I can get the next guy, the next franchise defenseman for 10 years, and Bergeron's 30, then he's on the table. Everybody should be on the table after the last 2 years.
I'm pretty sure Mike Giardi just said trade Patrice Bergeron.
I did. Trade him now.
Get 37 out of town right now.
I see where he's going.
All right. Nice job trolling the entire Bruins fan base
Giardi. That was
good work.
Good effort by me.
All right. Next up. We are going to go to our interview with the one, the only, your favorite and mine, Mike Felger. So, Felgie, we start every guest with some grab-ass stuff that I know you're a big fan of.
You're bringing me on to grab-ass.
Well, no, there's going to be a little bit of grab-ass, and then we're going to get to nuts and bolts.
How long is the whole thing going to be?
Like 20, 25 minutes.
20.
All right. It's a solid 25-minute treat for all the listeners out there with Mike Felger.
20.
All right, 22 and a half.
Let's go.
Where were you born? Where did you become a hockey fan? Why did you become a hockey fan? Or in your case, you were a Bruins fan when you were little.
Sure.
Right?
I was born in Old Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and for some reason – and I say for some reason because there's really no good reason. My father and my family were big hockey fans. My father was a big hockey fan, and he is a 6'4", 200-something-pound Jewish guy from Milwaukee who couldn't skate if you gave him three runners on each foot. Like, it never skated once in his life and would have no practical reason to like hockey. Maybe he liked the fights?
Yeah.
I don't know, but he sort of liked hockey. Not sort of. He liked it. So we had season tickets to the Milwaukee Admirals, who were like the U.S. Hockey League at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We would go down to Chicago two or three times a year. They used to do, and maybe to try kind of draw people like us, they would have these weekend matinees where they would play Saturday, Sunday afternoon. So we would take trips to Chicago all the time to go see a pair of Blackhawk games. And he got me into playing hockey when I was six. And so I played from the age of 6 to 16, and I was a goalie. And it ended at 16 when he moved us to Florida. And we moved to Naples, Florida, and that was it for going to see the Blackhawks and playing hockey and all of that. But I had the bug for the rest of my life.
Long before the Florida Everblades got to Naples.
I don't think the Blades were there. I don't think I know the Panthers and the Lightning weren't there. And so, but that was pretty much it. My claim to fame, remember Lane McDonald, he won the Hobie at Harvard. His father was Lowell McDonald, played for the Pittsburgh Penguins for years. He was the high school coach where I went to high school in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Okay, and hockey was not huge in Milwaukee. There was only...
What about the Badgers?
So I was a huge Badger fan.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, so, and I watched the Badgers all the time on public TV, right? So, Jimmy, I watched a ton of Badgers hockey. And so in 80, the U.S. 80 hockey team had Mark Johnson, who was Badger Bob Johnson's kid. Mm-hmm. And that was a big thing, as big as it was in Boston in 1980. It was big in Wisconsin, too, because there was a lot of mostly Minnesota kids, but there were WCHA kids on that team. And so... I've just, for no good reason, been a hockey guy since I was a kid. I became a Bruins fan because we had no team in Milwaukee, so you had to pick one. And I sort of, for some reason, gravitated towards the Bruins. Could have been as simple as little table hockey game that my brother and I had. And for some reason, one team was the Sabres and one was the Bruins.
And you always get stuck with the
Bruins. And I always played the Bruins. And so, like, since I can remember, I was a Bruins fan. And it's
nothing to do with number four.
Nothing to do with Orr. He was a little bit, you know, I was born in 1969.
Okay, yeah, so when, that was more before you. Yeah.
When I came of age, a little bit, it was sort of, it was the Don Cherry team.
I was just going to say, grapes.
The lunch pail AC, right? Like that thing is where I started, and I've always been a Bruins fan.
Now, you must have been pretty excited when you got to BU with the how hockey was there and how important it was after coming from Florida.
I am so dumb, and I'll tell you, I would be lying if I said that being able to go to Bruins games wasn't a small reason why I went to BU. I really went to BU because my high school girlfriend went to Harvard and like an ass.
Oh, God.
I decided to follow her.
Well, that's a good life choice to follow the girl to college.
Right.
And especially if she's going to Harvard.
I couldn't get within 10 miles of Harvard. BU was as close as I could get to Harvard. But part of it was I could go to the Garden and see the Bruins and college hockey and all of that, yes.
Well, at least you paid her back in the bean pot.
Correct him, Mundo.
Yeah, a little revenge.
She got
there.
The better of me. Trust me, I didn't pay her back with
all
that.
All right.
She ended up banging half the Harvard power play.
I hope you did all right too.
And the other half was the PK. She took care of me good.
You, how involved were you as far as journalism went in college, BU, all that stuff? I mean, were you heavy into it? Were you kind of still sort of figuring out what you wanted to do? What was your deal?
No, I knew I wanted to be a sports writer. When I went there, they had a good communication school, still do. And first day sophomore year, teacher went around the room, some journalism class, I can't remember, said, who are you? What do you want to do when you grow up? What do you, you know, what are your aspirations? And he got to me. I said, I want to be a sports writer, sportscaster, I don't know, something like that. He walked over, wrote down a number, and said, this is a guy at the Boston Herald. They do paid internships. They take a lot of kids from here at BU. Give them a call. Tell them I sent you. See what they got. So I called the next day, went down that week, got the internship. And I stayed there for 19 effing years straight. Went straight from answering phones to typing in box scores to the whole blah, blah, blah. Was there for 19 years.
Not as snobby as the Newhouse School at Syracuse, but they seem to crank out BU, plenty of people in the sports journalism world.
I think they do. I think they do. And I can't tell you who they are right now. I can't remember.
I'm not looking for examples.
No, but I mean, it's a good communication school, and they had a lot of connections in the business. And so that's how I got started, and that's how I – you know, covered the got to cover the Bruins in 97 and 98.
Did you have to pay your dues like high school?
Oh,
all
God,
that stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was the worst horror story you had doing something like that?
Well, so for the first 7 years, it was strictly not leaving the office unless it was to cover a high school game.
Yeah.
So, but it was mostly you started by at the Herald by answering the phones for high school sports scores, typing in box scores, typing in horse racing results, dog racing results, formatting it, you know. And then after about 7 or 8 years there, so I mean, you know, I did the whole internship and just kept going and going and going. Finally, they started giving me some writing stuff, and I started with like BU hockey and Revolution soccer and things like that. And finally, they put me on the Bruins beat.
Gus Martins must have crushed you on the soccer beat.
No question. I was his little soccer bitch. I was a soccer bitch. So I covered the Bruins for 2 years, called Jeremy Jacobs a thief. They got all sorts of pissed off. The next thing you know, they changed me to the Patriots in 1999. Next year, they fired Pete Carroll, hired Bill Belichick. They drafted Tom Brady, and, well,
the rest
that's
is
it. That's it.
What do you remember about the Bruins days, those 2 years? I mean, Pat Burns was a coach, right?
Yes,
for that.
He was a great guy to cover. Great. Because he was just such a wise ass, and he was cranky, and he gave great quotes.
But he was a good guy,
I thought,
underneath,
he was,
right?
He
I mean,
was a
that's
good
what
guy,
everyone told you. He was straight.
I'll tell you, I was so young and raw, and he did not like me because...
But that they none of those type of guys like the young guys. That's how Julian was with me in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, you know? I was me.
You felt like you deserved it a little bit.
I was just trying to stir up shit, and he knew it, and, you know, and not just stirring up crap, but, you know, it was my first real beat, so I didn't even do it well. And so he had very little use for me. He was, you know, maybe by the end it was a little better, but he didn't love me, and I wouldn't have loved me either. But he was a great guy to cover. What a great personality. What a wise ass. He was a former Montreal cop, right?
Yeah.
So he just sort of had this street attitude and this tell-it-like-it-is attitude. And he was a great guy to cover, and, he, you know, that was really not a great team at the time, and he did a great job those first couple of years. And it was a good team. It was Joe Thornton's first 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, and talk about a kid who just was not, like – God, he was 18 going on 13.
I'm doing a piece.
Tell him the story.
Oh, yeah. So I'm doing a story for Vice Sports on Joe Thornton right now. And I talked to P.J. Stock about his time with Joe when they played. You know, I think it was like 2002 to 2004. And, you know, we all know how Joe was very laid back. And he just wasn't a fit here for the Boston market. And so we were talking about that. And P.J. says, well, let me put it this way, Murph. There'd be times we'd be in the dressing room. We'd come into first intermission. And Joe's really sucking. And Glenn Murray would just stand up and be like, "Guys, the big boy doesn't have it tonight. We're gonna have to pick up the slack. You got to pick it up for the big boy. The big boy just doesn't have it."
Well, that was after Joe would whisper to Muzz.
Yeah, so
he'd
Joe
Muzz over and say, "I don't have it tonight."
Yeah, you'd have to let them know, "I don't have it tonight."
So
and that was it.
Muzz would
and they accepted
it. The rest
it.
Of the team.
And that's just who Joe was. And we were saying, you know, and that's why he's prospered in San Jose, because it doesn't matter there. You know, it fits him perfect. It's not like he's a bad player, but. That's just his personality, and it was never going to work here in Boston. So it was really cool getting that insight with
PJ.
Well,
so he had that personality, and he just was so immature.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what I remember from that.
What was your favorite guy to cover in those 2 years?
Oh,
they're obviously
God.
All good, the hockey
sure,
players.
Sure, they were really some nice guys.
Mike Knubel?
Tim Taylor. I don't remember Knubel as much.
He came later.
Yeah,
he came after
he was
you.
On
yeah, he was, yeah, he was later.
So that,
Tim
that,
Taylor.
You know, Burns' line, and boy, Claude Julien would have loved this line. Claude
Fribble crew.
Claude Julien would have had an orgasm in his pants on a nightly basis over, do you remember Tim Taylor, P.J. Axelson, and Rob DeMaio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a little grinder line, and Pat loved him too. Burns threw him over the boards.
Yep.
At any provocation, I'm telling you, if Claude had these guys, oh, God. Oh, they would get 25 minutes a night.
Okay, people forget that there was a stretch where Claude had P.J. Axelson at the point on the power play when they were looking for answers there.
That's
right. How much the P.J. Axelson love was. It's just a shame that he only had him for a couple of years and didn't have him for the full run, because that's the perfect Claude Julien kind of player.
Oh, but so that, like, Tim, they were all good, you know. I can't remember, you know, who wasn't a good guy. Like, I can barely remember guys who weren't good guys. So that was...
Well, that's a great thing about hockey, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Compared to other sports.
Kyle MacLaren and Anson Carter, it was that sort of era. Jason Allison was a little bit of a... I guess he was a former first-round pick and still sort of carried himself.
So it's true, huh? I heard a lot of rumors about him.
Well, I don't know what...
Yeah, just that he had an attitude.
He had an attitude. He had a little bit of a toot.
Little
thought he was better
I'm
than above he was.
Everyone, yeah.
Like, literally, I stopped skating from age 16 until I just started skating again. I think I skate better than Jason Allison. And he still acted like, you know, he was freaking Eric Lindros. He did. He had a little bit of a toot.
Who was the goalie? Byron Defoe, then?
It was Byron Defoe.
Good old Defoe.
And, the backup, Rob Talis, was such a nice guy.
Oh,
he was so nice.
He's
it was
with
like,
the Panthers now.
Good God. Say something wrong once. But they were I loved it. I loved covering hockey. I don't know, did they even really do morning skates anymore?
Oh, yeah, they still do them. Not as much. This
they're
year
trying
they're
trying it. They're trying out.
They still do
it. They're trying to get
them.
Rid of them, right, Joe? That's the thing, yeah.
It, you know, it used to be a real thing. You know, everyone did it. They did it every game day, and this is in the days, I don't know if they do this now, but they let the beat guys ride on the bus, ride on the plane if
no,
you
that
wanted.
Claude completely put that one to bed.
Yeah.
Once he took over as coach, weren't on the bus, weren't ever allowed to fly with the team, like all that
a
stuff.
A lot of teams are doing
was completely cut off. The only time I've been allowed on that team plane is once in a blizzard coming back from Carolina.
And to Belfast,
when
right?
We were going to get stranded, and then when we went to Belfast and when we came back from the Czech Republic. Otherwise, we're completely cut off.
So, I mean, I used to love the morning skate. I just used to love, you know, and hopping on the bus with the team, and, you know, as a 20-something-year-old kid on his first beat and who loved hockey, like, that was pretty cool. And then, you know, and then I liked sitting in the stands and watching them do their line rushes and smelling the ice. It sounds so corny, but just talking hockey with who's ever in the corner. It was just such a casual, cool atmosphere. I loved it. I loved covering the sport.
Let me ask you, Phil, you know, we're talking about them trying to phase that out now, and not many teams do that. You think a lot of that has to do with the age of the internet and social media and just how quickly, you know, if Joe and I are sitting on a plane and so-and-so's had too many, or we could just be sitting here. And, you know, how much does that play a role, you think, into that?
That's probably what they're worried about. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, if I were them, would I let it happen now? Probably not.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Even the stupid thing just with injuries, too, if you see a player limping where you weren't allowed access to him in, after the locker room.
Or if he comes on the comes on a plane in crutches or something. Yeah, right.
Someone even on a trip, like, you know, you can tell if someone's not playing a game, you know, a day before, like things like that, I guess. But, you know, back then when we did it, I don't even remember, you know, there wasn't the internet. It was just the next day's paper. So it wasn't like you could really break it if you wanted. Like, I mean, I don't even know. That stuff never came up.
Yeah, it's totally changed as far as covering the team now, where because of Twitter and all that stuff and the immediacy of it, you never actually get to spend that much time with the players. Even in morning skate now, it's not like I think it was even 10, 15
Felgi's
years ago.
Out of here. He's done with the show.
No, he just
changed the chalky.
I have a day job, so I have to I have to watch a little bit of the Red Sox. I'm sorry.
We're doing this shit.
Where there's not even that many players in the morning skate. It's not like back in the day.
It's not mandatory?
No. And they don't have to stay in there for a while. They just pass on through. And a lot of the guys don't even sit there at the stalls anymore. All the sports are like that now, where they want to limit the access so much to when you actually get to talk to them that they're never around. You know, I look at the only guys that can do it are the old school guys that have been there forever. Like Gammon still goes to the Red Fenway and wants to shag fly balls or hangs out in the batting cage and all that. And you know, you don't see that.
Those
anymore.
Baseball guys aren't sitting around for 2.5 hours with the thumbs up their ass anymore?
Not standing on the batting cage right behind the cage, like with the coach and the hitting instructor. Yeah. Gammon still does that. Everybody else has like a velvet rope they have to stay behind at all times. It's ridiculous.
Felgi, you mentioned your experience with the Bruins and what happened when you called Jacobs a thief. I was saying earlier in the show, and we talked about it a little bit off air too, that I see right now a lot of the old Jacobs ways creeping back in to what's going on around Causeway Street. And people keep saying, well, how can you say that he spends to the cap? But I said, I don't think it matters. You got to really look deep, but it's there. And there's ways to hide behind a cap and still meddle. Well, I look at Dougie Hamilton.
Okay.
The Dougie Hamilton deal, I think, was a perfect example. I mean, it was a complete salary dump for no other reason. Not a cap dump, a salary dump.
I don't think it was a salary dump. I think they didn't want to get tied into a player they didn't believe in was worth that kind of money.
Believe in him, though, Joe?
Yeah, or he didn't want to – that was also part of it,
too. Well, who didn't believe in him, though? See, and the other thing, and that goes to what I think is showing more of the Jacobs way again, is that when people get traded or they don't get signed here, they get tarred on the way out now. And we hadn't seen that for a while, and it's starting to pick up a lot where bad stuff surrounds the player on the way out.
So didn't they sour him because his parents were always calling about ice time and power play time and sign our other son and sign his brother? And so then he comes in with, you know, did he even make a salary offer? Or did he just say that I don't want to sign
they
here?
Gave
they
him gave a him a bunch of pretty, offers that they never responded to.
From what I was told, it was pretty much the same offer that Calgary gave him.
Right.
So I'm asking you then, why does he choose Calgary over here?
He hated it here, and they didn't like him.
I heard he did not like playing with Chara. I don't think he and Chara got along. I think Chara kind of didn't treat him great or very well as a younger guy that was getting a lot of
attention.
Okay,
how about the Riley Smith deal?
Hold on. All right. Think there was a little bit of – I don't know if jealousy is the right word, but I think Z would at times see us going up to Dougie after he had like a game-winning pass, and set up a game-winning offensive play, and we would all talk to him. And then Chara would feel like we only went to him when they lost.
Oh, God. Don't tell me that.
He did. I swear there was some of that going on. And I think it manifested itself maybe with – and it was also partially how Dougie plays. And I think Z wanted him to toughen up and was challenging him to do that and being kind of hard on him because of that too. And Dougie wasn't receptive to it. He just wanted to play on the power play, put up his points, be an offensive defenseman, and not worry about the other stuff.
Go back to Riley Smith, though.
So it's all this crap. If they offered him what Calgary offered him, they offered him market. So how could you say that that's a money thing?
Well, that's my point.
But the bottom line, Mark.
My point is if – okay, go ahead.
He just wasn't a fit on that team. I don't think he got along with the guys on the team. They had a big party in Vegas at the end of the year, and the only two guys that didn't show up were Dougie and Riley Smith, and they're the only two guys that would jettison from that team besides Lucic.
Here's another
afterwards.
Thing. Explain then the trade deadline and explain those press conferences we just witnessed, where no one could say who was in charge, and you had You had Don Sweeney saying, we're really preaching rebuild. Cam Neely kind of somewhere in between. And then ownership saying, we're a playoff contender. And Charlie Jacobs going as far as saying, was a Stanley Cup contender. So it seems to me like the ownership isn't really looking at it the way the management is. And I don't know. I think it's returning back to where it was.
I feel like the ownership's just putting it in Cam's lap and saying, this is his baby and he's responsible for what's going on.
Then
here.
You have no idea how it was. How it was is, I've said
this on the radio a bunch of times. Yeah.
How it was they would not let a coach puke on himself 2 straight years and let him keep his job.
Right.
Rick Bonus.
He took him to the conference finals.
The conference finals.
He swept the Canadiens.
After sweeping Montreal, and Harry fired his ass. So this is like, people have said this, going back to the old ways. No. The old ways, Claude Julien is on his ass a long time ago. He's not allowed a third chance after missing the playoffs 2 straight years. So that's different.
And having to pay him 2 more years doesn't matter?
They swallowed 4 years on Dave Lewis, didn't they?
Yeah, you're right.
So, and maybe it is somewhere down the line. I mean, if the old ways is they would have a low payroll. I don't see them having a low payroll.
There is no cap, are they going to still be spending high?
No.
No.
But Jacob said, give me the cap and I'll spend, and he has. So,
set the cap?
That's the fact of the matter.
He did.
Yeah, but the
so
feeling.
So, he's basically setting what he used to spend before.
If you want to tell me that he's cheaping out on scouts or coaches or things behind the scenes, then go ahead and tell me that. I have no clue. He spends on the roster, which he didn't used to. So, that's way different. And he's given this coach such rope, it's insane compared to the way it used to be.
And in hindsight.
So, you don't think they got rid of Riley Smith because of what they would have had to pay him once he was a restricted free agent?
I think they just didn't think he could play. I think they saw him choke down the stretch last year and said,
well, then maybe, they need to lose scouts.
We need a tougher guy. But I think. The old days.
It looks pretty good to me.
It seems like in hindsight, we're finding more and more. Maybe that was a Harry Sinden thing as much as it was a Jeremy Jacobs thing.
I agreed. I don't think the Jacobs know if it's puffed or stuffed. I mean, with all due respect, I think Joe's right. They put it on Cam's lap, and they really look at the playoff home dates, and so the pressure's on.
So wouldn't you say the trade deadline was kind of an order from above?
I don't think you got to
go out and do something to get to, to get the playoff dates. They treat it as if they were a contender.
So I think Cam knows that smartly, that the home dates are important to the owner, but it's not like the owner's saying, you know, pick up Lee Stepniak and pick up John Michael Lyles.
Do what you have to do to make the playoffs. You don't think that came down from above?
Cam knows what the owners want. Anyway, it's common sense. That's where they make most of their money.
Well, I think there was also an ego element to it for Cam, too, saying, I got rid of Peter Chiarelli and I'm going to get us back into the playoffs my first year controlling things.
Probably so.
There was definitely that part of it as well, in addition to any mandate he had from ownership above.
They want to make the playoffs. Everybody does. They are not, you know, they're not in the mind to go back to the bottom of the league and build like
that.
They don't
want to go back to the bottom of the league.
But they don't want to. So if you're not going to be at the bottom of the league, you might as well make the playoffs. What's the difference between drafting 14th and 17th?
Right.
You know, if you draft 17th, you're in the playoffs and you get home playoff dates and we get another couple weeks of hockey. That's what they want. And that, I mean, I think that goes beyond the money thing. I just think that's how they want to build.
Do you feel like I do, that they do need to blow it up to an extent and that's going to be the only way that they're going to get that defenseman that they need to get in order to turn things around? Because when you look at all these Stanley Cup teams that are winning and all these teams that are getting to the end, they have that number one stud guy that can play 30 minutes a night that's between like 25 and 33 years old. Every team that wins has him, and the Bruins don't have that guy anymore, and no prospects for him coming from the guys that they have in the system.
Well, define blow it up. I mean, I think you can make the moves necessary to start doing that and still contend and make the playoffs. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, trading Chara for assets that either bring you back a younger defenseman like that or you can use to get a defenseman, I don't think it makes you that much worse. Like, you know,
the key is, how do you trade Chara?
I've heard people say that, you know, if you trade Chara, you're conceding this year. And I'm like, what? He's not that good anymore. He's not even close to being that good.
He might have
anymore.
Caused a few losses.
And that's why, you know, when I hear he's like throwing shade on young players, like getting in the way there, I'm like, what are you doing? You're not even good anymore. And that's sort of holding you back. Like, so, I mean, I think you can trade Chara. I think you can trade Rask. And if you
I want to get into what you said on the radio.
Yeah, and if you're smart enough and make the right moves, I still think you can be a playoff team. You don't need those guys to qualify for the playoffs, in my opinion.
When you have Bergeron, Krejci, when you
have
the two
completely in agreement with you. My question
stuff.
To you on that would be, how do you do that? Put yourself in the shoes of the other teams. Why do you want an aging Zdeno Chara with that salary? And if you want a goalie, why do you want somewhat shaky goalie that's overpriced?
Okay, so because are you scouting Tuukka Rask on last year, or what he's been in his career and what he's going to be in his prime years? He's 28.
Yeah.
So isn't, I mean, the prime years for the goalie, it feels like to me, is right around 30.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is you're scouting what Tuukka Rask can be with the right players around him, and he's shown what he can be with the right players around him, one of the best in the league. And so that's how you rationalize it with yourself. And Chara is a specific thing for, I mean, I think Chara to me is a fourth defenseman.
Right.
You know, he is.
Well, if you're Chicago or L.A., he's perfect. He comes in, he's got that experience.
Or one of the Florida teams, he owns a home in Florida. Like, that might be an
Well, they don't have that. Do they have the number ones, though? Well, Tampa does, but not Florida.
Well, they have assets.
I mean, well, but, I mean.
Well, they got Ekblad.
Isn't Ekblad going to be a number? Isn't that the guy? So that, like, to me, that's where he projects on a team that has a Drew Doughty on the first pair or studs on the first pair, and he's a second-pairing guy who you limit in the regular season. In the playoffs, he's there for defensive zone faceoffs, PK, you know, matching up against scoring lines. And I think he's only got 1 year left at real money. That second year falls off the table, right? I think his salary goes
– I just think, guys –
Yeah, goes down to four.
I think the opportunity – You think it – okay, because I feel like the opportunity was missed after the 2014 season.
Well, believe me, I would
have – When the Habs completely exposed him and the team – in that series. And I think the rest of the league took notice, and you look at them, they haven't been the same since because everybody knows how to play the Bruins.
I would have made those moves then too. I think Char's been overrated for a long time.
I'm afraid of this covering the team and having a vested interest. I'm sure you are too. And I'm sure you are too, having some level of vested interest in the Bruins, that another year like last year is going to start pushing them close to oblivion or closer as far as fans losing interest, as far as going back to sort of the dark ages of where they were, not only just from not making the playoffs, but style of play and being soft a lot of the time and sort of going away from what the fans expect here, choking in big games where fans are paying a ton of money to go to the Winter Classic or to go to some of these other games. I mean, they're at a real dangerous line where they have to start making the right decisions. Don Sweeney and Cam Neely swung and missed 7 out of 10 times last year, and they can't afford to have another year like that.
Who were their three wins?
Well, let's see. Matt Bolesky, I'd give him a win.
Tie.
I think the Lucic trade, obviously.
Bolesky's a push. The Lucic trade
Landon
was a good
Ferraro
one.
On waivers. Great pickup.
I give them I had Sweeney at 1-8-1.
Okay.
The one is the Lucic return.
Right. I think Bolesky was good.
The Bolesky one is I give a push. Yeah. I think that was – You know, he didn't overachieve. He didn't over, deliver on what he was.
It depends what your expectations were, though.
It was just he was just good enough for what they gave him, and I'm happy with him. And so that's a push. That's fine.
Yeah.
1-8-1. That's Sweeney's mark in his first year, which blows.
Right, right. So how fearful are you?
I'm fearful, Joe. Yeah. Absolutely, of course. Yes, I mean, I think they're lucky. I think the passion of the fans is still there.
Yeah.
It really is, and I hear it on the radio every day. Like I could walk in tomorrow and say we're doing 4 hours.
Well, you
of
guys
Bruins,
opened the show up the other day with
and
Bruins
it's
talk.
Banged out, and we could have done
and
4 hours.
And they couldn't
hours
stop it. Yeah.
So the passion is still there, and the team is so lucky that they have it. But we all know if it's too long of a drought, we all lived through 07 and 08 in those years, and it was dark. 05, coming out of the lockout, that was bad.
Yeah.
And so it has the capacity to go back there.
Joe and I touched on this earlier in the show, and we were talking about what's the problems right now, and we were talking about scouting, all right? And, you know, I heard you talking the other day with Maz on the radio, talking about the goalie situation. You know, why do you have to have a goalie like that makes that much money when you can have a guy like Matt Murray come in out of nowhere? Scouting. And I think that's something that really needs to be looked at within the Bruins right now, because there seems to be this lack of finding those gems, you know, those diamond in the roughs like Pittsburgh did with Matt Murray.
No question.
And that's where I think the problem is with them, why they can't find that goalie, you know?
So is it goalie scouting? I mean, whose bright idea was Malcolm Subban?
That was Peter Chiarelli and the old guy that got fired, Wayne Smith. That was the very end, the tail end of that era. I remember, and I think I told the story earlier.
That was an ugly draft.
When I had in my mock drafts nobody even close to Malcolm Subban. I didn't think they were going to touch him.
I had him going like the fourth round.
I had Peter Chiarelli. Peter Chiarelli came up to me after they announced the pick, and he goes, "We surprised you there, didn't we?" And I was like, "Yeah." I didn't think you were going to pick a goalie at all, ever. I mean, why
would
you do that?
24
exactly.
At the time.
You had a number one young franchise goalie. Why would you? There were a bunch of defensemen you could have taken there that are in the NHL now that are playing. Why don't you take one of those guys instead of taking a goalie, a young goalie that you don't need?
What was his reasoning?
he did. No, I didn't say that to him at the time, but I was thinking in my head, like, yeah, of course you shocked me. I didn't think you were going to take a goalie. Why the hell would you take a goalie?
Who would
there?
Ever think you would do something so stupid? But, I mean, goalies are hard. Goalies are hard. So it's not that they missed on Subban. It's the first round. Moore went in the third round of the same year.
Right.
So it's like, that's where
you could have got Subban there.
We were just looking at this. You know, I think there were like seven goalies who went in the third round that year.
Yeah,
and that
I remember
feels,
that.
Feels to me like that's where you take those guys because it's hard. It's really hard to project at 18 what his head's going to be. What, you know, so fine, you missed on the goalie. Everyone misses on goalies. That's why you draft him in the third and fourth round, you idiot.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just, of all the bad Shirelli drafts, that has to be number one right now.
All right, we're going to end this with a couple of grab-ass questions.
Oh, I love it, grab-ass.
I know you
grab
do. Can't get grab it. Just both hands like the Charmin. Squeeze it. Did you ever picture doing what you're doing now as far as the TV, the radio? Like, did
oh,
you
God,
ever
no. God,
think
no.
it was going to get into this?
No. My goal when I was writing at the Herald was, or just coming up at the Herald, was to let me appear on Sports Final once.
Just yeah, let Lobe.
Let Lobel bring me on Sports Final once, and I will consider myself having made it. And he did, and that's where I met the Wood. That's the first time I met the Wood. She was coming off the news set,
and you outkicked the coverage on that.
Wow!
One.
So yeah, so it was good. I got on Sports Final when I was 29, 30, and I met the Wood. So yeah, so yes, I please.
Well, there's your sweet revenge for that Harvard.
Never, yeah, oh yeah,
Wench.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
got
yeah.
the revenge.
Yeah, no, so big scoreboard. Scoreboard is my favorite.
All right, good.
Ultimately, but so no, I never thought this. Never thought, because when I started writing, there was EEI wasn't even EEI, and the only thing was Sports Final. Like, that was it. That's the only place sports writers had a chance to earn money doing something else. So no, I'm incredibly lucky.
At the point you're at now, highest rated, is it just the highest rated sports talk show or highest rated show?
I don't want to. I hate saying it because it's a jinx, but we do really well.
Okay, yeah. You do really well on the radio. I don't know if you are the face of Comcast Sportsnet New England or if it would be Gary Tangway or if you guys have to fight for a
definitely
duel.
Tangway.
Okay, we're going to give that one to Gare Bear. But at the point you're at now, people would think that you're sort of close to a pinnacle of, you know, where we are. Is there anything else that you want to do? Are you just pretty happy doing what you're doing every day now?
If I do this for the rest of my career, I would love it. Love it, love it, love it.
That's a lot of love.
Well, I mean, the radio is a blast. The TV, you know.
Radio is great.
I do two jobs. You know, this is the TV's on top of it. So it gets to be a little bit of a grind. I work hard. The radio is a pure blast. Is a pure blast. It's a lot of times it's easier, and you know, 4 hours of radio goes quicker than 30 minutes of TV.
I noticed too how you guys on your show, you love to let the callers call so much and call in. You don't have as many guests. What is it about listening to the fans and letting them voice their opinions, letting them vent? What do you love about
he's
that?
He's just happy that he has callers now, because when we did 890 together, there was no reception, so nobody would actually call
so
in.
So long but I had no callers. I'm so excited like just to have them.
I like how you embrace it, though. I mean,
right, well, I think that's a strength of our show. It's unique. You can really, you know, what are people saying? It's just that general thing. What are people saying? I think you can turn on our show and get to hear what, quote-unquote, people are
the
saying.
The pulse, yeah.
And I think we're lucky because the audience is healthy and the simulcast audience on top of it. So we always have a full board, almost always. And it's, you know, I think we're fortunate to have that. So, and we can really, pretty much anything we do, we can bank on some callers there.
Right.
And so you can really talk about anything. And if someone wants to know, well, what are people saying about this? You can turn on Felger and Maz and I think get a taste.
In the words of the famous Tony Maz, you're absolutely right, Mike.
There it
Thank
is.
Thank you very much.
Okay, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to Felge for that breakdown. Half an hour, 25 minutes with Felge. Always a good time talking pucks. Very gracious to give us some of his time, even when he's the most listened to sports opinion maker in Boston, Murph. So why don't we throw out, in honor of Felger, a few of our own opinions, and we'll get a little interactive with some Twitter questions here to close out the show. What do you think?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Sean T. Murphy, at Merp underscore Derp. That's a great Twitter handle right there, my friend. A fellow Murphy.
Yep.
I really feel shifting the C to Bergeron would do something positive for the Bruins, but I suppose they won't, should they? What do you think?
Well, I think you and I have been advocates of this for a while, and I think we're right on board with that. Can they? Not until number 33 is out of the picture. I will tell you that I did have somebody recently tell me within the Bruins organization that they kind of feel the same way. They think it's time, but obviously it's a very tricky situation, a very sensitive situation, and they're not going to – like I said, the only way it happens is if they find a way to move Zdeno Chara and he's not on the team. I don't think it's going to be a situation where, like Joe Thornton in San Jose, you know, they come to the guy and say, look, we just think that it's time for the C to go on this. It's not going to happen that way. Chara is just too proud a guy, and I understand that.
Well, in that situation with Jumbo, I think they were also, in a way, trying to get him to waive his no-movement clause to trade him somewhere, too.
Yeah.
And thought that might push him off the ledge to do that a little bit. And
yeah.
That's an interesting scenario as far as Chara goes in Boston, if you really decide you want to trade him. I don't think the Bruins are going to do that because they respect what he's done for the team so much and him as a person and a player.
Oh, I think they're going to go to him and ask, Joe.
Well, no, I think they would ask, but I don't think they're going to force him into that situation.
No,
they're
not
going to
force
him.
No, they wouldn't. They will not go that way. Well, and plus, you know, Chara's kind of got a worse temper than Joe. I think that could get really ugly. So,
well, Chara's also won a cup. So that's something
Chara's
Joe hasn't
won a
done
cup
either.
Yeah, you know, and I'm right. By the way, writing a story on Joe for Vice Sports, and you'll have to
and
check it out.
And about the birds and squirrel and little animals that are growing.
I actually
in his
talked to our good old friend PJ Stock and how he thinks Joe has changed and not changed, and how him not changing is helping him do what he's doing right now. And that might be finally getting over the hump in San Jose. So we'll see. Yeah, but, you know, back to the Chara thing, I wonder, Joe, can they ever buy him out? Would they ever do that? Or this, does he have a no movement or a no trade?
He's got a no movement.
So you can't expose him in the draft.
No, he's not going to be taken in an expansion draft. That's not going to happen, and I don't think Rask would either. And you know, those kind of guys, I don't think it makes sense to do it. And I don't think it makes sense to buy him out for this reason. If you want to trade him, you could get value for him.
But he's not going to waive it. The only way to get rid of him
is
to buy him out. Right?
Maybe he will.
But what if you come to him and say, we're going to buy you out?
I think the scenario that would play out for him to move allow his no movement to be waived is you're not going to be able to do it over the summer. But if you go into next season and things aren't going well and they look like they're not a playoff team again, and you go to him and you say, look, Big Z, we want to trade you somewhere where you have a chance at another cup.
Right.
And it's the best for you. It's the best situation for us. I think he would listen then, and I think you could get good value in return for him then. I just don't think it's going to happen over the summertime. And I think that's something they could do, and that might be a smart thing to do. And I think you've got to do something where you're getting value back for him rather than trying to play hardball and buy him out or do this other stuff. I just don't think that's the right way to go. And it's certainly not the right way to buy out your captain at the end of his contract. I think that sends a bad vibe, too, that I don't think they want to walk down that path. But as far as, look, Bergeron is kind of the captain and the heart and soul of this team already anyway.
Right. He doesn't really need the letter.
He doesn't need
the
letter.
Players know.
Yeah, he's already a clear leader on this team, and that's well established. I think this would just be sort of a nominal perfunctory move to put a letter on him in like a symbolic thing. It wouldn't actually change anything at all. So I would hold off on it for now. And you know that 37 is going to get a long run with the C, given his contract. You know,
and
once Chara
is he not the
on.
Type of player? You know, people keep saying they need to win because his prime years are running out. Bergeron's I'm talking about. I don't know, but Patrice Bergeron strikes me as the kind of guy that's still going to be going at 40 years old. I mean, if Jaromir Jagr is still going at 44, whatever he is, you know, 42. I mean, Patrice Bergeron's got a lot of years left. I'm not worried about
that. As long as he can avoid the concussion stuff, I think he's got plenty of time. And he'll end up being like a gritty third-line defensive checking center that also –
and he's not going to mind that.
No. And he'll be still an incredibly useful winning player and all that good stuff. But I do think he'll get his run at some point, and he doesn't need it right now.
No.
And the effect or impact that giving Bergeron the C would have on the team is way overplayed. I don't think it would make a big deal one way or the other. What Bergeron and Chara do need, and I wrote about this today, is
some help.
They need Sean Thornton, Johnny Boychuk, Andrew Ferentz, Mark Recchi, those type players.
Yeah.
They need vocal guys. They need guys with personality. They need guys that can lighten it up. They need guys that can light up players if they have to that aren't performing well. You know, they need those kind of players, and that is difficult to replicate.
Joe, I'll tell you this. I was a story.
Because those guys aren't those guys. Bergeron and Chara are not those guys.
I was doing a piece on the Florida Panthers and how their owner, Vinny Viola, incorporated his military background into the culture of the team, right? And the CEO, Matt Cowell, long story short, came out and just brought up Sean Thornton. He said, you know, that guy is exactly what we're talking about. And he's like that perfect example of the relationship between hockey players and military And then we got into talking about, is there still a need for that type of player? And he said, of course, yes, there is. And he goes, I'll give you some interesting stats, Jimmy. He said, do you know that 6 of the 7 concussions that our team suffered this year, Thornton was not in the lineup? I don't care what any of you stat geeks out there, any of you say right now, that to me is proof that you need a type of guy like Sean Thornton on your team. And the Bruins are proof too. And that's a great point by you.
And that big Kevin Spacey in space hooded sweatshirt thing that was so much fun that the players loved and that really had a good vibe to it.
Yeah.
That was Thornton too.
That was Thornton.
People have told me that was Thornton behind the scenes that started that whole thing.
Yeah.
And he didn't want it to be given the credit that he did it. But that's a thing that Ferentz and Thornton did in Boston, is bringing those kind of things into the dressing room.
Yeah, the jacket.
For the play. Yeah, exactly. And that stuff, people can mock it. Kevin Bieksa can say it's a Pee Wee hockey thing during the Stanley Cup Finals, and they can rag on it. Exactly. Huh. But that stuff matters.
Yeah.
And you need to bring some of those guys back to bring some of that into the dressing room, because Chara and Bergeron, while they're great leaders and great lead-by-example guys, they aren't those kind of guys.
And analytics can't measure that, Joe.
No, you're absolutely right. Once again, it's Murph and Hags 1, Fancy Stat Geek 0. And with that, that's another great edition of the Great American Hockey Show.
Wait, Joe. You missed.
Keep it great.
Somebody asked, what would Finn Hagerty think of the Bruins?
We're going to save
that. We'll get to that later.
We're going to save that for next time.
All right.
As for this episode, keep it great, keep it American, and always keep it about hockey.
If you want to hear more Comcast Sportsnet podcasts or learn how to subscribe to our iTunes feed, head over to csnne.com/podcast.